And good morning, KRFY listeners. I'd like to welcome you to the Tuesday, June 21st morning show with myself, Julie Calamine, and my co-host, Phil Huff.
Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Phil. How have you been?
Been good. Did you have a good Father's Day weekend?
Well, I sure did. I went fishing with my hubby, who's not a father, but it was a wonderful day up on the Coeur d'Alene. We had a great time.
Yeah, great time to be outdoors.
How about you? What were you doing?
Did a little trail project work and short little hike on Sunday and just enjoyed the weekend.
It's beautiful weather.
Yeah.
Well, this morning we've got a great show. We'll be talking with Tom Dabrowski, who happens to be the vice president of the Idaho Trails Association. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Julie.
It's wonderful to have you here. Yes, great to have you here today. We'll start with the weather report. So you may have noticed, but it happens to be cloudy and raining right now, supposed to improve later on today and up to a high of 72 with clearing. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 48, a little bit of a southwest wind. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 77. So things are improving. We can all get out in our gardens again.
It looked like it was coming, clear weather was coming when I was driving across the Long Bridge. You could see the opening.
Good to hear about it. It's been an interesting day or two, hasn't it, Phil? Tell us about what's going on in the skies.
It always is right now. It's today is the 21st, the solstice time period. This year, the solstice actually fell on the 20th, yesterday. And coincident with it was the full moon, which is a fairly rare occurrence, depending on how you measure their closeness or proximity every 5 years or 50 years. But the strawberry moon, the early summer moon, the time when the early fruits start to ripen and strawberries are ready to be picked.
It's a great month. It's a great month. Beyond that, we have a few on this days. One is that in 1955, we had Johnny Cash's first single, Cry, Cry, Cry. And then 20 years later, James Taylor with How Sweet It Is. Quite a change in the music world in those 20 years. So let's move on to our interview. It's going to be a great talk with Tom from the Idaho Trails Association. And let's start with the first question. Tom, tell us about the mission of the Idaho Trails Association.
Okay, Julie. The mission of the Idaho Trails Association is to promote the continued enjoyment of Idaho's hiking trails. And fundamentally what that means is a big job we have is to keep those hiking trails open. As you know, trees grow up and the brush grows across the trail and logs fall down. Particularly, we had a huge windstorm event last November. So what we're finding this spring is we have big red fir trees, and I mean 24-inch type trees across a lot of our trails. And we have to go in and get those trees out, clear the brush out, keep the trails open.
That's a pretty awesome job.
Yeah.
So how do you do that, Tom?
Well, the Idaho Trails Association made a decision years ago, 6 years ago when it was formed, to rely primarily on traditional tools. So we will occasionally use power tools like chainsaws. But since so much of the stuff we do is in wilderness and remote areas, we use the old crosscut saws. And some of the listeners may have used those in the past and remember them not so fondly as misery whips.
Misery whips, right.
Yes. Well, the good news is we have a fellow in the Idaho Trails Association who's a master saw sharpener. His name is Jeff Halligan. He happens to also be our executive director. In any case, Jeff's job is to keep the saws sharp. And as you know, trying to cut wood with a dull saw is pretty labor intensive. And so our saws are sharp. They work pretty well, and so we use crosscut saws. And one of my favorite tools with a name like Dabrowski is is the Pulaski, invented by Ed Pulaski back in 1911 in the huge fires they had here in Idaho way back then. Very handy tool that looks like sort of like a hoe on one end or an adze and an axe on the other. And we use those to help clear out water bars and improve the drainage in the trail, that sort of thing.
So you feel a certain kinship with the Pulaskis.
I do. Yes. I do.
Uh-huh. I've got to go back to chainsaws for just a moment, though. Mm-hmm. I've seen some pretty darn big trees knocked over on the trails. And do you really mostly cut them with a crosscut saw? Or?
Absolutely.
Oh, my word.
I was just down in the Payette Forest the end of this past week. We had our crew leader college down there. where we train people who will lead our field crews, and we used the crosscut saws, and we took out some very large trees. The interesting thing about using a crosscut saw is it's quiet, so you can hear the tree move as you cut. Mm-hmm. You can hear it crack, and you can with a chainsaw you can't do that. I have a tree farm on our farm at home, and I use a chainsaw, but I find the crosscut to be really interesting because as things are moving, which can be a problem with a downed tree, you can hear it when you're using a crosscut saw.
Yeah, you can feel the whole process.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more. Go back and paint the picture of the history of ITA, how it got founded, and how it came to focus in on that particular aspect of trail maintenance.
Well, the ITA was formed about 6 years ago by a group of people that I consider really smart people, one of whom I have to say is in the room right now, and that's Phil. Brad Smith from the ICL, Sally Ferguson, a number of other folks got together and said, look, we have a model that's worked well in the state of Washington. It's called the Washington Trails Association. It does a huge amount of work to help keep hiking trails open in Washington, and we needed something like that in Idaho. It was clear that the amount of money available in the federal budgets and in the state budgets to work on trails was decreasing rapidly. This was clearly going to be a problem. Folks got together and said, look, what can we do about this? Well, one thing is to go advocate with the budgeting, with the congressional delegations and that kind of thing. The other thing is to get out and do the work. It's like the highway cleanup program, where you see people volunteer to go pick up trash along the highway. Well, the idea was to get people to volunteer to go out and work on those trails. And simple concept, but as you know, the devil's in the details. And so it's a matter of getting people to volunteer. And the other thing is then training the volunteers. One of the things we're very concerned about is safety. And when you're out doing a trail and you're swinging this device invented by Ed Pulaski, you want to make sure someone keeps that far away from their toes. And so the ITA formed to start helping with trail maintenance, and in doing that, to create a cadre of volunteers who can go out and do that work effectively and safely.
And so to be clear for the listeners, part of the reason for the use of primitive tools is in some places the use of motorized, mechanized equipment is limited, wilderness or
correct,
recommended wilderness. And in other places, it's easier to empower volunteers with that skill set. The liability is lower. The safety training for those is less than it would be for, say, chainsaws or the excavator diggers. And frankly, the sustainability of getting them into the backcountry and working for a week without having to haul all the fuel. Those are some of the reasons, right, Tom?
Exactly. If you've ever gone through a chainsaw safety course, as I have, and you've seen photographs of injuries from chainsaws, they are horrific. They can be life-changing injuries. And that's one problem. And then the other thing, as you point out, Phil, is having all of the accessories that go along with the chainsaw, like the gasoline and the bar oil and all that sort of thing. Plus, frankly, one of the nice things about the crosscut saw is it's quiet.
I was just going to mention that.
And it's more in keeping with why we're out there in the first place.
Right.
If I wanted to hear all of those engines, I'd stand down here on First Street.
And there are certain people who find pleasure in misery.
Oh.
Now, Phil, it's not. The nice thing about a well-tuned crosscut saw and a good team of people, because you do this generally as two people, once you get used to working together, teamwork, it's fun. It goes nicely.
That's good to hear. Tom, how did you get involved with the ITA?
Well, if you'd like to know the truth, again, a fellow in this room said to me, Tom, Phil and I had hiked together in a few places, and he said, we have a project going out out here in Grouse Creek. Why don't you come out and help? So I did. It wasn't long after that I was asked if I'd be willing to be on the advisory board for the ITA. That then led to the board of directors, and that then led to be asked to be vice president. So here I am. And the fun part of all of this is I still get to go out and work on the trail.
Yeah.
And you must have a love of hiking or trails, something that made you want to join in and help out.
Oh, absolutely. I think my dad started me hiking when I was probably four, and have hiked, been fortunate enough to hike all over the world, and have done some really incredible trips. And since I'm retired, I decided when I retired, I'm just not prone to sitting and watching Oprah on TV, and so I have a tendency to get out and move a lot.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, I'm out here enjoying these trails, so probably ought to do my part to help maintain those trails and keep them open for my kids and grandkids and the others that follow after us.
And I hear you do some scouting of potential projects along with the Monday Hikers.
Yes, Monday Hikers, great group. If any of the listeners would be interested in joining a great eclectic group of folks who have a common interest in enjoying the outdoors, just go and do a Google search on Monday Hikers in Sandpoint, and you can get to them. But every Monday they go for a hike somewhere, and they know hikes that aren't in any of the books. They're not on the Forest Service list of hikes. Some are, but a lot aren't. Because they've been doing this for a long time. Great group of folks, and they're fun to go hike with. And what we do then is when we're out there doing those hikes, we can see the trails that need help. And then our local, in the Forest Service here locally, Mary Ann Hamilton is the trails and recreation specialist. And Mary Ann then, I generally talk with Mary Ann from time to time, and I say, gee, Mary Ann, this trail's a problem, or that one didn't look too good, And so then we can get some ITA people to go in and help clean it out.
I imagine you can recruit from those Monday Hikers for Idaho Trail Association members.
To some degree. And you know, in all candor, I'm hoping to get more of the Monday Hikers out.
I think that's a hint if they're listening.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. They're great folks. But we really, as a hiking community, we really need to say, okay, I'm going to do my part. You know, I'm going to help out, and I can say the other person who got me started on this was a fellow Bob in the Monday Hikers, who said a number of years ago, you know, we go out and we do a highway cleanup project twice a year as the Monday Hikers, but how about if we go out and help some of these trails? So
nice.
That got me going on that.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, hikers are people kind of used to, as Phil said, a little misery when hiking and getting in that certain mood for a little bit of discomfort. And so, you know, maintaining the trails isn't maybe necessarily all that much different from a long day of hiking. It should bring some enjoyment either way, I would guess.
Oh, it does. And frankly, I never really think too much about the misery when I'm hiking and the uncomfortableness.
Well,
because
exactly.
You know, I'm having so much fun being out there, and when you're tuned in with what's happening around you, I find it to be a really pleasant experience.
That's right.
And when we're out working on the trails, we don't work people really hard. I mean, many of our people are like me, old.
you don't?
You know, it's not really intensive physical labor, because again, we don't want to wear people out. But the neat thing about it is, after you've spent the day working on a trail, you turn around and look and you say, wow, look what we got done.
I can imagine. I bet that's a great feeling.
So you've mentioned Mary Ann from the Sandpoint Ranger District, but I can see from your project list that we'll get to in a bit. You're also doing other projects on other ranger districts. Tell us a little bit about how ITA fans out across the state that way and what your area of interest mainly is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm particularly interested in northern Idaho, and we don't have a particular boundary anywhere. I think it's more helpful to think about regions rather than a line on a map. But here in northern Idaho, we work with the Bonners Ferry District, Pat Hart and Steve Pettish. I mean, these are great folks that have been doing this a long time, get a huge amount of work done with a little bit of money. And then down in the Coeur d'Alene District, Josh Jurgensen and Ian Cotter, again, the recreation specialists. These are people I have found that these folks are really dedicated to improving the trails, to keeping them open, to providing as good an experience for users as they can. Then in the rest of the state, we formed originally primarily in the Boise area, and we're now expanding over into the southeastern Idaho, Idaho Falls, Pocatello area. We have some new members over there. Oh, and I'm really pleased to announce we have 17 members now in northern Idaho. And so we're expanding geographically, and we're also expanding in the number of projects we do. In 2015, we did 2 one-week projects. Both of those were in the Sawtooth Wilderness. This year, we're going to do 5 one-week projects, 2 in the Sawtooths, 2 in the White Clouds, the new wilderness area in the White Clouds, and 1 in the Frank Church.
I went online to look at those work mm-hmm. parties, and I noticed some are already full.
So most are great, already full. Mm.
Yes.
It's really interesting, Julie. The people that go on those, we have lots of return folks, and they're very sought after.
They're popular.
Yes, they are. And we bill them as a work vacation. And I haven't been on any of those, but the people that have been, I was this last weekend down in the Payette Forest. I was with a couple who had been on every one we've had so far, and they said they just love them. A great way to spend a week because they get a lot done, and there's a great deal of camaraderie. We provide the food, and we have cooks that come in that I had someone tell me, my meals are to die for. And so we have a little bit of a competition going on.
Literally.
Yes, right. No, and the, you know, it's the kind of thing where they get the competition going between the various cooks, and that can lead to really great results. But people love to do those. So there's one of those trips that still has some space available, but that's what we will do. We're going to continue to grow.
So in terms of the part of the state that's covered by ITA, that's expanding and the projects are expanding. It sounds like the organization's growing.
It is.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about how it's come to where it is today in the last 5-6 years.
Yeah, it's been 6 years ago that it was formed. And of course, I wasn't here when that happened. But and candidly, to me, the history is valuable from the standpoint of looking at how we grew and to continue to do the right things and do fewer of the not right things, but to continue to grow the organization.
So where is it heading from here?
Where it's heading is continuing to grow. We're doing in northern Idaho this year, we're doing 5 projects. Last year we did 3. So we've almost doubled. I could have done 2 more if I had more people to volunteer. And so where it's going, Phil, is we need to continue to get more people to come out to be willing to help with trails. And as we get more people, we'll do more trails. That will bring more notice from the hikers in the various regions around the state. And then that will lead to even more. We're a small organization today with a budget of less than $100,000 a year. So we got a lot of work done for that money. The Washington Trails Association that we were modeled after has an annual budget of $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's lots of room for us to grow. The concept is continue to grow by doing good work, doing safe work, doing trails that people are truly interested in, and then just continue to expand to be able to keep these trails open and accessible to the people that would like to use them.
So you've mentioned volunteers a number of times, and just to be clear then, the projects are volunteer-oriented, not a hired, paid trail crew.
Correct. We don't have, unlike organizations like the Montana Conservation Corps or the Idaho Conservation Corps that have paid workers, we're all volunteer labor. And the tools are provided by the ITA, the Idaho Trails Association, or the local Forest Service. And all that people need to bring are stout boots, work gloves, long pants and shirt, lunch and water, and we'll do the rest.
Tom, you mentioned your annual budget. Where does the funding come from?
It comes from two primary places, Julie. One from personal donations and memberships, and the other is from grants. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's I've found so fascinating about all of this is I had no idea how many organizations are out there that give money to groups like ours because they support the basic purpose. And so we apply for grants, and that's how we get a lot of the funding. We do have two paid employees in mm-hmm. in the ITA organization. One is our executive director, Jeff Halligan. He's a part-time employee. And the other, we just hired a young fellow that I happened to meet on Dodge Peak up above Pack River last year. Mm. His name is Clay Jacobson. He's one of the few people that have done the through hike of the Idaho Centennial Trail. Maybe we'll talk some more about that in a bit.
Sure.
And Clay did that through hike last year. Very strong, really interesting fellow. And he wants to help with trails, so we hired him as a trail specialist for the summer.
I'm just picturing him tracking you down, running you down with his resume in hand, because it's such an exciting job.
It was really a fortunate marriage between Clay and the ITA. It really worked out very well.
So you mentioned the projects, and let's step right into that. Tell us about those five projects. Which ones are coming up? Which ones have you done already?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit more about them.
Sure. The first one we did this year was English Point, which is a recreation trail just to the west of Hayden Lake. So it's down to the south of us in the Coeur d'Alene District. It's about a six-mile-long trail. It's what's referred to as an urban trail, because that means someone can come home from work, hop in the car, 15 minutes later, they're in the wilderness. They're out in a beautiful forested area. It's open to hikers and mountain bikers. And then another section of the trail is open to hikers, bikers, and horse people. And we go down there, we clear out fallen trees, we cut the brush back. And this year we had to clean out some things they call parkways, which are raised walking sections in swamps. The grass over the years had grown up to where it was taking over the trail. We had to dig all of that out. But that was the first project. The next one is coming up this weekend, Saturday. Originally, we were going to go to Fault Lake on the Pack River Road. The Fault Lake Trail is quite brushy. However, right at the very start of the trail, there's a stream crossing. I was up there. I went up there Sunday evening to check it. Still too high. I decided it wasn't going to be safe. And so we're going to do instead the Beehive Lakes Trail.
Still a lot of snow coming off the mountains.
Yes, there is. In fact, one of our members, Don McIntosh, was up at Beehive last week, and he sent me a photo, and at the upper end of the basin, there's probably 10 feet of snow on the ground.
Yeah.
And the lake's totally frozen, no water visible yet. So anyway, that will be the next one. So if anyone is interested in going and helping on the Beehive Lakes Trail, go to our website, which is idahotrailsassociation.org, and click on the link. It'll say Fault Lake. We haven't changed it over to Beehive on the website. Click on that. You sign up with a little form, and the computer sends me a message and say, hey, one more volunteer.
So describe the day Saturday for people who might be interested. How long will it be? What will it involve? What do they need to bring?
Sure. We're going to meet at Bonner Mall at 7:30 in the morning. And we'll carpool up to the trailhead. We'll be ready to go to work about 9 o'clock. And we'll go up the trail. And the first thing we'll do is lower sections of the trail. There's an old logging road. There's been some alder growing over that. We'll cut back the alder. And then as we get about halfway up, we're going to start to run into four or five fairly good-sized trees. We'll cut those out with the crosscut. And we'll run into a bunch of smaller trees that are up there. And those we use a new device that I learned about from Joel Sather over in the Cabinet Mountain Wilderness called a Katana Silky Saw.
Silky, yeah.
They're a fantastic tool. Very quick, a whole lot lighter than carrying a chainsaw. Yeah. And they work great. We'll also do some drainage. There's sections of the trail that the water's not draining off properly, so it gets quite muddy. And then the more people that walk on it, the deeper the hole gets and the worse the mud becomes.
Right.
So we'll do drainage work. That's where Ed Pulaski's tool comes in handy again.
And if a new person joining your group hasn't had any training, that's all right. You'll just assign them to things they can do.
That's correct, Julie. Okay. We put people on tasks that are commensurate with their experience and skill and strength. And some of the simplest things we do is we have what's called a swamper. And mm-hmm. when we cut back the brush, somebody picks up the brush and we get it off the trail and we try to hide it so it doesn't look like the big mowing machine's gone through.
Now, tell us the real reason you're shifting to Beehive Lake is the scout for huckleberries, because there's more along that trail than the Fault Lake Trail, right?
Well, that leads us to the last project of the year, which is going to be the Roman Nose Lakes again. We did Roman Nose Lakes last year. This year, we're going to do Roman Nose Lakes in September. And the only hazard on that trip is we have a tendency to have the volunteers founder in the huckleberry patch.
Oh, boy.
Because there's lots of huckleberries up there.
I think there's one more project, the B-Top.
There is. Yeah. That's the B-Top connector. This is one that's particularly near and dear to my heart. I believe that the most beautiful trail in northern Idaho is the Alpine Way, Trail 120, that runs along the high ridge that's up above Hope. It actually starts over on Trestle Creek, goes by Trestle Peak, comes around over by Round Top Mountain, sadly now notorious because of what happened to Pam Bird over there, and continues on past, again, along a very high ridge, then ultimately used to drop down to the Lightning Creek Valley. Years ago, over 8 years ago, some private landowners at the bottom had blocked access to the eastern end of that trail. So it's about an 18-mile trail through there. It is just beautiful.
Let me interrupt for just a moment. Is it 18 miles one way?
Correct.
And can you get picked up at the end of 18 miles, or do you have to walk back another 18?
That's what we're working on, Julie, because right now the answer is no, you can't. You have to go back. At least partway. And what we're going to do this year, through the good work by Marianne Hamilton from the Forest Service, she's been working on this for years, this summer we'll complete what's called the B-Top Connector. There's about a two-mile stretch at the bottom that's been closed off because of problems with access through private property. Marianne did a bypass around that. We have about a half a mile left to do. So come on out this year. And the dates are, I'll make sure I get the right dates, July 26 and 27, 2 one-day projects. That's a Tuesday and a Wednesday. The reason we're there in the middle of the week is to fit this in with the other, she has the Idaho Conservation Corps crew will be in there working, and we want to dovetail in with things they're doing. But for 2 days, we'll be up there helping. And this summer, we believe that will be completed. So the B-Top Connector will reopen, and for the first time in over 8 years, the public will have access to the eastern end of that beautiful trail system.
And it's always a challenge to get volunteers on weekends when there's so many other things going on in Sand Point.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Mondays are out because the Monday hikers wouldn't be able to participate.
So correct.
It narrows that gap down, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And then the other thing, of course, is we want to make sure that we're not conflicting with other organizations. And for example, a great time would have been the first weekend in August, but that happens to coincide with the festival, and I want to go listen to music.
Right.
Just another question about the connector. Is it new trail being created, or are you just opening up old trail that has been abandoned for some time?
2 miles of new trail, Julie. Mm. It's about a mile and a half completed, that's already done, and about a half a mile left to do.
Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just tuning in, we're talking trails, specifically Idaho Trails Association, with Tom Dabrowski, the vice president and local project master. We're listening to 88.5 KRFY, community-supported radio for North Idaho. And I think it's about time for a music break, isn't it, Julie?
Well, it sure is. And thanks to Phil's extensive knowledge of hiking music, we're going to have a good one, Walking Jim Stoltz with Along the Great Divide.
That is a classic.
All right, and that was Walking Jim Stoltz with All Along the Great Divide. And you are listening to 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio for the northern part of Idaho. And we're having a morning show this morning, Tuesday morning, with Phil Huff and myself, Julie Calamine. And our guest this morning is Tom Dabrowski with the Idaho Trails Association. And I'd just like to mention that if you're not within range of the radio station, you can always live stream us at krfy.org. And if you miss part of this morning show, you can always go back later and listen to our podcast at the same website. Well, I'd like to bring us into the next part of our morning show with a quote that relates to our topic today. May your trail be dim, lonesome, stony, narrow, winding, and only slightly uphill. Edward Abbey.
It sounds like they need some folks from Idaho Trails Association to work on that trail.
Yes. Yes.
Ed Abbey probably would have preferred that there be less maintenance rather than more.
Yes, and in fact, when we do trail maintenance, sometimes we leave trails in a primitive state, but we clear them out to the point where they're safe.
Right.
Sometimes, for example, you'll have a log across a trail and it forces you to go closer to a cliff kind of thing. But yes, I personally prefer primitive trails.
So there's different standards for different trails, from more urban type use, mixed use, like the English Point, that might be cleared to a different width and frequency and not stepping over logs, where some of the more primitive backcountry trails might not be to that standard.
That's correct. Now, if you've ever hiked up to Chimney Rock from the Pack River side, that trail starts on an old logging road, and it's wide and nicely graded. After you leave that, you start to go up a really steep, narrow, sinuous trail. So, yes, different standards for different trails.
So tell us how that decision's made. How do you come to decide what trails you work on to what standard?
The decision on which trails to work on is an interesting one, and this is one where I'm going to make a plea to the listeners that as you go out and hike, as you're out there on those trails, if you see a trail that needs some work, please let either Marianne Hamilton at the Forest Service know, or let me know. You can send us an email to our email site, the IdahoTrailsAssociation.org, and let us know. Because what we basically do is we poll the user groups, people like the Monday hikers and the Wednesday trompers, or whatever the group is. And there is a group in Bonner's Ferry. And we talk to those folks and say, which are the really beautiful trails and which ones need help? I can remember, Phil, that you were on one of the trails up there in the Bonner's District, Burton Peak.
Oh, right.
And there were just a huge number of blowdowns. I mean, almost impossible to get through. And so when we know that, then we can schedule those trails. We also talk with the land use managers, the people that I mentioned earlier, and we say, okay, which trails would you like to see done? Because they know when they were last serviced. They know if there are particular problems with those. And then finally, we try to focus on the trails that people really love. And so last year, for example, we worked on the Mickinac Trail here in Sandpoint. You know, I've been on that trail every day of the year. I've never hiked that without seeing at least one person. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a very popular trail. It's a tremendous community accomplishment. And so we go out and we try to maintain those trails that people really love and enjoy.
So it's a little bit of a popularity contest.
It is.
Reality TV without the TV.
Yes. And that does several things. One, because we work on popular trails, it keeps those trails in the kind of condition that the extensive use doesn't degrade the trail. Because if you have a trail where there's blowdowns across the trail and mud holes, people begin to go around it. You develop social trails, and pretty soon you have a trail that has many branches and parts. And so popular trails get that kind of treatment. The very unpopular trails, the ones that don't get used very much, we leave in a more primitive state because some people really enjoy that more primitive experience.
Right. Maybe an opportunity to see some wildlife and know that they won't run into as many people just because
Correct.
It is more primitive.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm.
It's nice to see that you do maintain a variety of trails because I can imagine there are a lot of users down in the Coeur d'Alene area that benefit from an urban trail, and yet we want to get up in the mountains too, so it's great.
Mm-hmm.
So you've talked a little bit about how hikers, as they're out there, can be eyes and ears for the Forest Service, for ITA. What are some of the other ways that hikers can help while they're out there or after the fact?
Well, good question. One of the things that I always ask hikers to do is, number one, pick up any trash that you see. It is unfortunate that we have people that go into the backcountry and into these beautiful alpine areas and leave their trash behind. And so we always pack some small plastic bags, and we carry trash out with those bags. And we also ask hikers to pick up sticks and rocks or small logs, anything that's easily movable, move the stuff off the trail. Just make it a little bit better after you've gone through it. And then finally, to let us know if there's a real problem with the trail so we can put it on the list. We may not get to it right away, but at least we know.
I won't literally get too far into the weeds here with this question, but having just taken the weed identification course at Scotchman's, I'm wondering, are you interested in knowing about invasive plants on the trails, or is that not really your area of interest?
We have some interest in that area, but I have to admit it's not our focus. I expect as the ITA grows that we will get more into that, because I've taken the weed identification course and I have the book. The Friends have done a fantastic job with that, as they have with the wilderness first aid training.
Yes.
Because that trains people to deal with emergency situations. Unfortunately, I got to go to that training, and some of our other members have. So now we have certified people on our trips that if something does happen, we have people there that know how to respond. So again, that's part of our long-term vision, because invasive weeds are something that we really need to do something about.
So volunteers might start knowing nothing about trail maintenance or weeds or first aid, and through the process of engagement, they come out learning more.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a definite benefit for your association. Are there others? Are there other reasons a person might want to join?
A huge reason is the camaraderie. You meet like-minded people, active people, people that care. And I found that some really great friendships build up that way. And that's happened to me personally. I've made a lot of friends in the area that I didn't have before, and have turned into really great friendships because I now realize that we have a common interest and common characteristics.
So tell us about some of that off-the-trail experience ITA's planning for trainings or events or other things to connect people or train people.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just finished what's called the Crew Leader College. We had this down in McCall, Idaho, on the Payette Forest. Excuse me. What we do is we get potential trip leaders, crew leaders together, and we train them about how to safely use a crosscut saw, so they get crosscut saw certified. We train them how to use Ed Pulaski's tool safely. We train them about PPE, protective equipment that we want people to wear, what our safety rules are, how to properly do the work so that you're not standing so close to someone you could hit them with a tool. And we're very, very fortunate in this regard that we have Jeff Halligan, our executive director. Jeff, for 20 years, ran the trail crew that did the trail maintenance in the Frank Church Wilderness on the west side of the Middle Fork of the Salmon. And if you've never looked at a map of Idaho, lay the map of Idaho out and look at that Frank Church Wilderness. It is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff tells stories about having to carry out pieces of airplanes that crashed in the Frank Church wilderness and being able to get those things out. But in any case, what we're doing in the IETA is training people to be safe when we're doing this work, and then those people then train the volunteers in turn. And we do some advocacy work. For example, I really want to do kudos for David Langhurst, the director of Idaho Parks and Rec. David has decided that this lack of funding for non-motorized trails is an issue we have to deal with here in the state of Idaho. So he's had several meetings around the state to get the public together and say, okay, what do you want to do about this?
Do they do some maintenance, or is it strictly up to your association?
The Forest Service and the Idaho Department of Lands do some maintenance, but I can give you some numbers. In the state of Idaho, the state collects through taxes and licensing fees for non-road motor vehicles, off-trail motor vehicles. They collect a little over $2 million a year. That $2 million a year goes to maintain motorized trails. The amount of money that non-motorized trails get is about $100,000 a year.
About your budget.
Well, yes.
But it doesn't all go to you.
It doesn't. None of it comes to us.
No, I understand.
What it does, basically, it goes to pay for a state person who helps coordinate non-motorized trails and a few other administrative tasks, and very little of that money actually goes to the trail work.
So without delving, because that could be a whole show in itself, is this an issue that Idaho Trails Association's engaging in?
Yes, and we're not advocating for any particular legislation because we're a 501c3, a charitable, you know, a tax-deferred, exempt.
Yes.
Thank you, tax-exempt organization, and we don't do lobbying. But what we are encouraging is the discussion about what do we do about this? Because we can't do it all with volunteer labor. Because, for example, when we're up there on Saturday working on the Beehive Lake Trail, we will have a Forest Service employee with us because we're basically volunteers to the Forest Service, and they still have to provide some supervision. And if we don't have that Forest Service person, in a lot of cases, we could have volunteers, but we can't go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So as a state, we have to figure out how are we going to provide some money to keep these trails open. Here in the Sandpoint District, there's 300 miles of trails, not old roads, trails. Out of that 300 miles, 200 miles is non-motorized. It is an absolutely irreplaceable resource. I mean, for anyone who's hiked here, the Mikinic Trail, the Alpine Way, up to Beehive Lakes, Harrison Lakes, all these wonderful destinations, these trails are absolutely irreplaceable. I mean, it's a tremendous resource.
And it's a treasure that we need to hang on to. It's a big reason why I'm here.
Absolutely. And so what we need to do is continue to work with David Langhorst and the state and find what mechanisms can we provide? What can we come up with? I mean, as a hiker, I'm willing to pay some money to get some money in the coffers to do this kind of maintenance work. The state of Washington has done that. They have a couple of mechanisms. It works, and it helps them keep their trails open.
So for folks listening who might not be available for one of the upcoming projects, but want to engage with ITA, want to help out somehow,
mm-hmm.
want to participate, what can they do? Can they become a member?
Yes, we have various levels of membership. The first thing you can do is go to the website, IdahoTrailsAssociation.org, and just browse through the website. There's even the recipe of the month for a backcountry meal.
I need that. I'm going there.
Okay. And lots of other tips on how to hike safely and the kind of gear to carry and that kind of thing. And then information about what they can do to help.
And some of the other benefits to member, you mentioned a few, but mm-hmm. I'm sure there's others.
Yeah, and I've just gone through a number of them. We send out a newsletter regularly. And again, to me, one of the really great aspects of membership is to meet other like-minded people.
Other hikers, and I'll bet they have information to share, trails to share, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I bet you learn a lot when you join.
Oh, Julie, you can just imagine what it is like after the day is done and people are sitting around at the end of the day. The stories begin to be told.
So I know we're getting close on time, but do you have a favorite hiking trail you'd like to share? Or is your favorite hiking trail one you'd prefer not to share with people?
No, I've already mentioned it, the Alpine Way Trail 120. And if you haven't been up there. Now, some bad news about 120. As I said, it's 18 miles from one end to the other. And until this early winter, you could get in the middle by going up the Wellington Creek Road. Well, the bridge across the Pack River, there on the Wellington Creek Road has washed out, and it's unsafe to cross. So now you can't get in the middle. But if you have two cars, you can start end there at Trestle Creek, go by Trestle Peak, you can walk up to the top of the peak to the old lookout, beautiful views, then keep going along the trail at the top of the ridge, go up to the top of Round Top, then you come down to the saddle and you can drop down Strong Creek into Hope to the second car. Would make a great hike, and that's through there, I think that's 7 or 8 miles.
Yeah.
I'm putting that on my list. I'm going to have to try that.
Now, that's also part of the Idaho Centennial Trail, which again could be a whole nother show, but speak briefly to that.
The Idaho Centennial Trail was formed back in 1990 during the Idaho Centennial, and it was the brainchild of a couple of different people, and one of whom is still with the state, Leo Hennessy. He's the fellow in charge of non-motorized trails in the state. It's 900 miles long, starts from the Nevada border, goes to almost the Canadian border. It ends at American Falls up above Upper Priest Lake. And it is a fantastic hike, some easy, some incredibly difficult, but it hits all the big wilderness areas, and it has been done by very few people. When I met Clay Jacobson last year on Dodge Peak up above Pack River, he was within 50 miles of the end of his hike. He'd been doing it for months. He had about 850 miles under his belt, and he told me that Don McIntosh and I were only the third group that he had met all summer on the trail. And he said that through the Frank Church Wilderness, he went weeks without seeing people.
That would be an incredible experience to walk through a long trail like that and really see no one. Sounds neat.
Yes. And the other advantage, of course, of the Idaho Centennial Trail, there's some really neat sections that you can do just in little sections, like the Alpine Way and here in northern Idaho.
So with all long trails, there's favorite sections to be done as day hikes or weekend trips.
Yes.
Well, Tom, it's been wonderful having you on the show this morning, and we hope that anytime you have some breaking news or want to talk about an upcoming season, you feel welcome to come back.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and tell people about the Idaho Trails Association.
It's been great to have you. I think I'm going to become your newest member and get on that website. Thank you, Tom.
Great.
Well, let's move on. Thank you again, Tom. And we're running a little bit short on time, but I think we'll have time to talk about upcoming shows and some current events. Just a quick mention that you are listening to 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio for the north part of Idaho. And again, we'll mention that this morning interview can be heard later via our podcast. And if you're out of range, remember to go to krfy.org and catch us streaming online. Phil, what's going on?
Well, we are the first morning show of the week, but there's two more this week. Tomorrow on Wednesday, June 22nd, join morning show hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Perez. Their guests will be Brian Holt, Bonner County Veteran Services Advocate. That's at 8 o'clock here at 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Then on Thursday, June 23rd at 8 a.m., join us for host Jack Peterson. He'll be having a special guest. We're not quite sure who yet, but he always finds someone very interesting and compelling. There's also a special note to thank everyone for helping make the 88.5 KRFY 2016 membership drive a huge success. If you did not have the opportunity to donate during the drive, but you still can, by going to our website, krfy.org, and donating on the secure PayPal button. Special thanks go to event sponsors Randy and Rick from Evans Brothers Coffee, Josh from Laser Images, Ned from Sandpoint Property Management, and all of the local musicians who graced us with their beautiful music.
It was really fun. We had a great turnout. I'll mention that next Tuesday, on the Tuesday morning show, we're going to be hearing from Terry Smith from Habitat for Humanity. That should be an interesting chat with her. And then one other event I'd like to mention that is related to KRFY is going to be the 7B Sunday up at Schweitzer. We'll be up there. I hope you'll be able to come on up and talk to, I believe, me at the booth.
Opening summer day on the mountain. It's always fun.
Should be fun. Another item that you might want to check out this weekend on the 25th and 26th will be the Chili Cook-Off. That's going to be at Trinity at City Beach, which happens to be at 58 Bridge Street. They're hosting the International Chili Society Chili Cook-Off, and it's benefiting the Bonner General Health Community Hospice. That will be held both days on the shores of Lake Pendere. Saturday's event is the Mountain States Cook-Off, and Sunday's event is the Idaho State Cook-Off. Both will have awards, prize monies, along with bragging rights. So they'll be serving red chili, chili verde, salsa, and the people's choice. So check that out this weekend. And the last item that I'm going to talk about, and then we'll finish up with another song, is the Shakespeare at the BBC. It's A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Panada. And as you know, that's at 300 North First Street. They offer free admission to the special series by the BBC. It's A Midsummer Night's Dream, and it stars Lynn Redgrave and Robert Stevens. So I don't think that's the newest version, do you guys? No.
No, but there's been hundreds of covers of that, copies of that.
That is correct. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening on Tuesday, June 21st morning show. I again want to thank you, Phil, for being my co-host, and thanks again, Tom Dabrowski, for joining us. It was a wonderful interview.
Hope you all join us next Tuesday.
See you next week.